Welcome to the On2Hire teleconference. Yeah, as I understand, the topic of today is basically a brief report from the OMG technical meeting in New Brunswick, where Michael has been, and then the organization of the revision of the request for proposals that we have to submit for the December meeting. So the deadline would be somehow mid-November or something like that. Are there any other topics? So one quick thing, I have started to revise the onto-iop.org homepage and try to replace ISO with ONG and also the more broad scope, so you can have a look, but not finished yet.
Could you paste the link onto the chat?
Okay, yeah. And one question is, so I think I have asked Elisa this, so she agreed that we can publish the RFP draft if we want. So are there any objections that the RFP will appear there on this onto-hire.org page without any access restrictions? I would sanitize it so delete all the comments and recorded changes, but just produce the current snapshot.
That sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, great. So, yeah, maybe Michael, you already have reported a bit during the last teleconference, but the connection was quite bad and you also wanted to participate, so maybe you can start with your impressions of the technical meeting.
Right. So I did, distribute the notes that I had taken, that contained like six major questions, and these are questions that arose out of informal discussions in addition to the meeting, the little more technical parts of the meeting. So we had, two main editing sessions. Roy Bell at Raytheon participated in those at the Tara Aitken, and so everyone had seen Roy's comments prior to the meeting, so we basically went through all those comments and the draft that's the outcome that I distributed after the meeting is mainly the result of responding to Ray's input. So in addition to that, there were a couple of other OMG people from the advisory board or from the other the architecture board, keeping the A, B mixed up. The architecture board is AB, who would kind of pop into the meeting and would make kind of a few overall comments. I gave two presentations, one to the design, analysis and design technical group. So they were the ones that actually, were kind of working with in terms of, issuing a formal document. So they gave us a document number so that it's kind of an official document within ONG. So I gave a presentation to that group to give an overview of the project. Some additional questions came up in response to the presentation. And then near the end of the week, I gave another presentation to the ontology SIG. They call it a PSIG, it's a platform SIG, whatever. I haven't quite got the nuances there, but there weren't too many new comments there, because a lot of the same people were present at the earlier presentation. So overall, like I say, there's a positive reception to the proposal. Some aspects I think were kind of aimed at. I mean, there's also all the comments were very constructive as well. So I think one of the main another person that we should probably kind of keep engaged a little more. So somebody like Roy Bell is Nicholas Roquette from JPL. He had a lot of comments, not in the document per se, but a lot of questions at the presentations, and also just at coffee breaks, he would have a lot of comments. So when we kind of send out whatever our next version is, what we're kind of happy with, we want to make sure that we send it to him so we can get his more detailed comments from that.
Could you repeat the name?
Nicholas Roquette. Let me. When I finish talking, I'll post his email address and name information. Can't quite do two things at once. Thank you for pasting in the major comments there. So, like I said, one of the things we have to clarify is the scope that we want Onto IOP to encompass. We're not solving all the interoperability problems in the world. I think there's a few points that maybe we just need to draw attention to that are already in the document, right? So there's this within OMG, there already is a lot of work dealing with interoperability and this. The name is case, it starts with Q, their transformation language. And we do have notes in the RFP to distinguish what's happening, what we want to see in IOP versus what already exists within OMG. And we might just need to emphasize that just a little bit. Again, there were some comments about, this sounds like a research project. And I think John Soa made a few comments in email about, all referring to standards. And that wasn't the point of this comment. We have to have references to other standards. It's more they just want to, be assured that we're not doing new research here, that we are actually applying research to this particular problem. And so that's where this one person suggested, just having citations to the literature. So, when we say we have a definition, where's that definition coming from? Oh, here's the paper, that used that definition. So, emphasizing this idea that we are grounded in existing research, we're not doing something new from a research perspective within the RFP. And then there are other questions about just the level of detail that we want to address here, right? So question five is from Nicholas Roquette. So if you're saying, example, how detailed are these meta-level relationships? Do we just say an approximation, or is it more involved in that? And that's sort of leads to the question of definition. So what do we mean by approximation? Because this is an RFP, this is a request for proposals, we are specifying a requirements document. And so if we just say, approximation, well, then it's kind of vague enough, ambiguous enough, and somebody could come up with other proposals and say, well, I meet the criteria here. I meet the criteria for these requirements. And that's kind of one of the themes, I guess, that people were saying, you have to look at this as a requirements document and, be as unambiguous as possible as to what would satisfy these requirements. So, yeah, that's about something that, like I said, the other ones here, we're going to have a discussion about any clarifications.
Yeah. Many thanks, Michael, for presenting this at New Brunswick. Maybe we quickly go through the 6 points reach some consensus about how they should be addressed. I have already answered in an email to these points, but yeah, I want to be sure that we agree some consensus, and I could paste my answers to the chat, and then we can see whether this is okay or whether something should be added. Of course, also other people have answered.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah, I was just pasting in Alvin's email address and stuff like that. Yeah, he's within Ontolog as well. There's most of his Ontolog. But yeah, thank you very much for getting that information. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so point one, that this is too ambitious. Yeah, so I think we should emphasize that only a small subset of languages and translations need to be covered. We have in the requirement that we want to have some core, and we can also refer to OVM. And the emphasis on the meta language and not on the individual languages. I also suggested that we refer to DOL, but maybe that's not a so good idea because DOL will be one proposed answer to the RFP, so it would be problematic to mention this in the RFP because, as Michael said, the RFP should concentrate on the requirements.
Yeah, I like what you're saying there. So I think one thing I wasn't quite sure about is how we want to balance this emphasis on the small subset, which we're rightly doing, versus the extensibility. And I was worried that was a bit of a slippery slope. So if we say, you know, we're only requiring a small subset of the languages, and there's a set of languages that are mandatory requirements, like, you know, OWL and Common Logic, et cetera, but then if we want to say that there's certain extensibility so that, you know, it should be possible to introduce other languages, I'm not sure how to kind of deal with that. If people would say, oh, well, now you're opening the door to arbitrary interoperability. But I think maybe if we keep those as two separate requirements, then maybe we should be okay. Hello? Hello?
We're there.
Okay, sorry.
Till I guess you realize I've muted you. But if you have a mute on your own phone, you could use that too.
I can mute myself directly, so it's better if
right,
on my computer,
via
the Skype.
But you cannot hear the noise yourself. So.
No.
Yeah, but whenever you unmute, then there's a fairly high level of hum on the line when you unmute.
Is it better now?
Slightly better.
And now it's even better?
About the same as just now.
Okay, so we can agree on the answer to the first point, yeah?
Right, and like I said, we want to also balance that with the extensibility requirement. Right, so you know, the emphasis is on a small subset of languages that need to be covered, while at the same time, in a different requirement, allowing the notion of extensibility, you know, for languages that have a model theory. That reminds me also, and I think this is reflected in the document, where we actually have the requirement for a model theoretic semantics. That the word semantics, of course, you know, kind of also leads to a certain degree. Ironically, the word semantics leads to ambiguity because people have very different ideas of what semantics mean in different fields. And so I'm pretty sure I actually did write in model theoretic semantics in there. But we have to be pretty, you know, precise about that as well. Well, you know, the conformance criteria for additional languages. But I think that we'll cover that in under point six. So I just want to remind myself of that. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So point two, I think we have enough references that we can cite, so and that's not a problem.
Right, so did we have, there was a bit of discussion on what a heterogeneous ontology is, or this notion of logical, you know, heterogeneity. There was a lot of discussion about, like, well, what does that mean? You know, where do you get this, where is this concept discussed? I've never heard it before. So I'm not sure if we have a definition in the current document?
what heterogeneous logical theory or heterogeneous ontology means?
Yes.
Let me have a look. No, in the glossary there's only structured logical theory, so I will add heterogeneous logical theory.
Yes. Because there was a bit of discussion about that.
Yeah, there should be there.
I think we already have, I think one of the key cases already discussed the idea of an example of what logically heterogeneous ontology actually looks like. So I think that's okay. We just need to have it in the glossary.
Sorry, I muted you again till just now because your noise was drowning out, Michael. Are you still there, Michael?
I'm still here. I'm finished.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry. I'm here in Magdeburg and in my office. I have a headset, but I cannot connect it to my computer, so that's the problem.
Yeah, a brand new office. It takes a little while to get settled in.
Yeah, and basically no furniture. And so. Okay, so that's...
You sent a note a couple of years ago about heterogeneous, an example of heterogeneous ontologies. You want to put that into your, into this some?
Well, I think...
Where you talk about...
Right, so I think... I'm not sure if we would include an example. It might be a good idea to include an example with one of the use cases that that we're using.
In fact, sure, that may just be the use case.
Yeah. So let's see. That's in.
I've got it here as October 19th, 2011.
Oh, almost 2 years to the day. So I think say use case two. When we use an example of the daytime vocabulary, that might be a good place. We could give an example there. Use case.
Well,
one.
You know, there
also
might be a bigger use case here. Yeah, the bigger use case is heterogeneous ontologies. And you've got Mariology and process and all of that stuff.
Yeah. So use case one, we should include it, probably an example. Maybe use case two.
We should include use case one and two where in the...
No. So the idea would be to have an example of a logically heterogeneous ontology in use case one or two. It might not be a bad idea, or at least have a reference to something there. So that somebody has a clear idea of what exactly this looks like.
But look at use case eight. And there is this picture. Doesn't this suffice? I mean, how would we actually present a concrete heterogeneous ontology without having a syntax? Because
maybe
syntax,
what we can do is have a... We'll have to ask maybe Elisa, like, what's the... are we allowed to, like, have, like, hyperlinks or something within the document? So somebody can maybe, go to something, say, within OntoHub, and there's a URL there, and from that URL, they could actually see what a heterogeneous ontology looks like, in the sense of, combining multiple languages together.
Yeah, but couldn't you do that graphically as well? Because that's what it's doing. And you have a picture of different colors or with different shading to say, well, this comes from this language and that comes from that language.
Right. So Phil's actually maybe doing So Till's claiming that use case 8, the picture in there, does that, but you're saying actually have another example of, say, in use case 1 that doesn't, say necessarily commit to, say, the syntax of Dole, for example, but illustrates what that would look like. I think that's in one of your papers with Oliver.
Yeah.
Till? I think there's one, the hyper-ontology paper, I think, has an example of what the Mariology example looks like without necessarily having a particular, committing to the syntax of Dole. Yeah, that's right.
Actually, I pasted the link to the Hyper Ontology paper, so,
So maybe we could actually take one of the figures from there.
Which figure is it? Because I have an opening here, but...
Let's see here. Maybe I'm thinking of a different paper.
Yeah, we have a Hyper Ontology open here, and it was kind of... I see typically only the pictures that says how to link different fields, but not for a specific axiom.
We haven't taken the Foyce paper.
Anyway, I think we don't need to figure out this now. I will look for something and put it there. So the third thing, that's basically several parts. So any will translations between specific languages be part of the standard? I think yes, although in an informative annex.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And the second thing, will only be one translation be allowed? No, I think there should be several translations possible, but we could have one default translation.
Agreed.
Okay, then what is the relationship between different translations between the same two languages? Yeah, so... For example, from all to common logic, you have two translations. One is basically using all the features of common logic, and then it can be very concise and elegant, but it uses the large sublogic of common logic, and the other one basically is a more involved translation for the individual sentences, but it uses a smaller sublogic. So it's the kind of trade-off. And I think there always will be trade-offs, and that's basically the relation between the different translations.
Right. I think of all the issues here, this one might be the one that we have to think about a little bit more closely. And again, thinking in terms of the in terms of requirements, like how would proposal meet this particular requirement. So we have to be, this is something, of all the issues we have on the agenda here, I think that's one we have to think about a bit more. So just to be precise about, what are these relationships between possible translations? Or you're like, in a sense, if multiple translations are allowed, what are considered to be, they're not necessarily equivalent translations, but because if you could also have different translations that are, relative to a particular profile, say an owl or whatever, and so, again, we just have to be a little more precise about what exactly constitutes a different translation and what constitutes different yet equivalent translations.
Okay, so about that's interesting. So far we don't have the notion of equivalence between translations. I mean, in the research there is something about that. Should we include this? That there should be a notion of equivalence between translations?
I think this is something we have to think about maybe, between now and our next meeting is what do we mean by this and what do we want to say about this? I don't have an answer right now.
Yeah, I have some answer, but
But
so far I didn't consider this to be part of the standard, but maybe we should have that. Yeah. Okay. Terry asked, how can we establish conformance for an extensibility requirement? I think the main point is that the extensibility should have the scope of any formal logical language with a model theoretic semantics. And maybe we should
verify that there is a notion of what a logical language is, or a kind of meta framework like institutions or something else that is required, so that we have a mathematical definition of the notion of logic, and then the language, the meta language, should be applicable to all such logic, whatever the precise details of the mathematical definition of what logic is.
We need to bound it a little better, though. You can't just say any logical language, first order and second order and in order and, you know, modal logics and stuff like that. We're not going that far, are we?
Why not?
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I guess this is, you know, I guess this is why I was kind of worried about the slippery slope between extensibility and issue number one about the ambitiousness of this proposal. But I think the language doesn't have to solve the meta language that would be the proposal satisfying these requirements. It does not have to solve all the interoperability problems, but it does kind of have to have the capability of determining what languages could possibly be supported by it. It's a very delicate balance, I think, but I think Neotail's point about you just specify what are the conditions that a particular logical language needs to satisfy, I think might be the way that we need to go.
Okay. So then let's resume point three. So the last thing, the last question is, will mapping between specific ontologies be part of the standard? I would say no.
Yeah, I agree. I just put that up there because I was capturing questions, and so wanted to reflect the, the input from the person. But yeah, I agree. I say the answer is no.
Okay, then number four. What is the need for the meta language? This justification needs to be aligned with the mandatory requirements. Show how the requirements and the native to the use cases. So we need to relate the requirements to the use cases. So my answer is that we may need more use cases in order to ground all the requirements. So each requirement possibly should be grounded with the use case. So which use case really makes this requirement necessary?
Exactly. I think you had a table at an earlier meeting, maybe 4 months ago, where we had a listing of the different features in the language compared to the different examples that we had.
Yeah, this table is in the old working draft document.
Yeah, so we might want to go back and pull that out. That might help us.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Good, then point five, how detailed are the meta level relationships? For example, consider the date-time vocabulary. Do we simply say that the DTV-OWL is an approximation of DTV-CL? I would say yes. That's basically a very good use case for an approximation. And maybe we should even be more explicit and say that this is really an example of an approximation. And it's also an interpretation of theories that is situation.
But I think the question, I think this question was from Nicholas Roquette, would be that do we simply require that a proposal for these requirements has the same definition of approximation, has a particular definition of approximation and simply leave it at that? Or do you actually have something more involved that when you say that DTV-OWL is an approximation of DTV common logic, that, the following sentences in common logic, do not correspond to anything in the OWL version, whereas the following ones do? I mean, that was the question there.
Yeah, that's more difficult. So I think approximation, as I understand it, and this also calls it used in the ontology literature, is basically trying, so you have the cosmetic theory, and then you could have an old theory approximating it that is basically an old theory that is implied by the logical, cosmetic theory, and it should be maximal with that property.
Right, but
there is this approximation, and sometimes you might only have a sub theory of that.
But I don't think people have a clear idea of what it means to have a maximal, owl-definable sub theory of a first order theory. Maria, is that correct?
Sorry.
So is there a clear understanding of given a first order theory? What is the maximal, mm-hmm. owl definable sub-theory of it?
Antithesis will model it, know that. They should, because you know that owl, language is a full first order logic language. If they were, how they would realize it, I'm not quite sure. But if they did teaching, it takes a while to actually grasp. So if you would have only that sentence, that wouldn't do.
Right. I people implicitly can say that. I mean, you can implicitly say, you know, this is the maximal owl subtheory because, as Till said, this is the set of sentences definable in owl which are entailed by mm-hmm. the first order theory. So it's an implicit definition. But can you actually say this set of axioms, this set of owl axioms,
mm-hmm.
Is the maximal owl definable subtheory of a first order theory? What techniques do people use to actually prove mm-hmm. that?
So there is some research literature about this, but it's mainly focusing on approximating owl theories in EL or propositional theories in Horn propositional logic and such. So I think there is not much literature about approximating first order in owls, so that's a new research field, but for me it's enough that there is research which is about certain approximations of certain logics and other logics, and of course it's not there for all possible combinations.
But yeah, so far as the only one that I know of that actually approximation, that's very little of it, but that is only with respect to the profiles towards L2DL. But I haven't seen anything with respect to approximation all to with first order logic. People know in theory how it should work, but practically, no. You just try to squeeze into all whatever you try to, but there is no systematic approach to it.
Yeah.
Question: is DT what? Version of OWL is DTV OWL written in? EL?
That's a good question. I'll have to go check.
Basically, you're not talking about the time ontology, right?
Yeah, DTV is the daytime vocabulary. So Mark Linehan had a paper. Sorry, go ahead.
Because there's also a time ontology. That was initially what I was thinking of. They actually were from.
But for DTV, we could also say it's just an interpretation of theory, and that will suffice. So that the DTV all is interpretable in DTV all.
Right. But I think kind of what we're kind of getting at here with this notion of approximation is. I think we'd want to have a notion of approximation that's just simply, you know, like you said, a sub-theory. It's entailed by the axioms of the one without making any requirement that it be the maximal sub-theory or, you know, those kinds of conditions. I think that's, you know, where the boundary between existing work and future research is.
Yeah, but in the research literature, they usually want to have some maximality, and possibly with respect to some restricted query language. Right, and if you don't have maximality, then you can just have an interpretation of theories and say, this theory is interpreted in that theory. And
right,
then it's much more about approximation.
Right, but see, Maria's point was, and my point as well, is that if somebody says, I have, well, so you say, you know, let's look at you know, time ontology. So the first order ontology has a linear ordering on time points. And I come along and say, okay, well, I have a, you know, here's my Hall ontology, and it just basically says this before relation of time points is transitive. And I say, that's a maximal sub theory of linear ordering that's definable in Owl. Is that true? I don't know. I've never seen a proof of that. I'm not even sure how someone would prove that in that particular example, in that particular case.
No, that's an open with this question.
Yeah.
You have literature about approximating Owl and EL so that you know that you have an EL theory that is actually the maximal approximation of a certain Owl theory. So that's there. And there are also Owl theories for which no EL approximation exists that is maximal. You have an infinite chain of better and better approximation. That also can happen. But if you don't have a maximal one, then you just can say it's an interpretation, and you don't need the notion of approximation. Because otherwise, if you don't have the maximality, then it's difficult to make it into an operator in Dole, for example, that you have an operator on logical theories. You would need a definite outcome. And maximality ensures that you have a definite outcome. If you don't have maximality, it's more a relation. And then you can use interpretations that are exactly the relation that you need.
Right. Well, I'm just saying we have to be clear about this because, say, the question I pose is an open research question. The work that you cited, show, you know, is a different set of work that is theoretically, you know, set. What we're proposing is kind of somewhere in between there. And I'm just saying we have to be a little clear about, what is the requirement here.
Okay, I will try to formulate something along these lines that I have just said, and then we can discuss. So let's process.
So can I suggest one thing? On this state-time vocabulary, I think, I mean, that's probably the best example to show, to show what we need to demonstrate here. Could we, or is it reasonable to suggest that we might engage Mark Linehan on this, since he probably knows the daytime vocabulary inside out, I mean, for having worked on it so long?
Yeah, I can talk to Mark. I mean, I'm the one that debugged their common logic axioms.
Mm.
So yeah, I can talk to Mark about that.
So I mean, if we go into a lot of detail demonstrating, I mean, when we say approximation, I mean, what was lost in the lossy transformation and so on, I think it's probably going to be extremely useful.
Yeah, but see, the problem is, my example I just gave about approximating a linear ordering, that's a simple version of what the approximation of DTV is. The example I gave is much simpler than the reality of DTV Owl versus DTV Kalman logic. So, I mean, it's a good example to use because DTV is already within ONG, but you have to be careful because it can really outstrip the current state of research.
No, I would avoid this example. I would just say it's an interpretation of theories, but not an approximation.
Okay.
You could use DTV Owl and approximate it in EL and say that is an approximation, and then we can point to research literature where this has already been studied.
Okay.
This approximation of first order into Owl is an open research question. There are people working on that, so in a few years we might also have that in, but the point here is that there are some worked out approximations and we can just use them. And of course, in other cases, there are not, so we cannot use them.
Right. Just, before we go on, so Till, who do you know is working on this problem of approximating first order.
Carson Lutz.
So Carson's actually working on it? Okay.
And he said preliminary research proposal. I can have a look there. Okay, so point six. I would just answer that. So point six, are the conformance criteria for logical languages specified with enough detail to be testable? And I would say, as before, we require a mathematical definition of a notion of logic, for example, institutions, and then the meta language should work for all logic falling into this definition, and then clearly testable.
Agreed.
Okay, yeah, then we are through. Unfortunately, I have to leave in 5 minutes because I need to catch a train to Bremen where I have another meeting tonight.
I think we've accomplished quite a bit here.
Yeah, so how to proceed?
Yes.
So, I could start revising the RFC according to our discussion today. If anyone wants to help me, I'm also very glad. And yeah, so who
yeah,
wants
I,
to?
I can help you out with the writing.
Great. Yeah. Okay. So then we should keep on this. Yeah, unfortunately, it has to be a Word document because the OMG people also want to have a comment and add them in the Word document and not OpenOffice. So the original strategy that we had to use OMG does not work. So we continue with this doc stuff and turn it around back and forth. And we always need one person that basically owns this document and can edit it, and then it can be sent around to someone else who edits that. So there should not be any concurrent editing because otherwise we get chaos.
Yes.
I'll be happy to read it for syntax and grammar.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks.
I could also do some proofreading. This is Christoph.
Yeah, well, definitely you want a lot of eyes on this. Yeah.
Yeah, great, thanks.
Respect to the use cases and representation, I actually am thinking about how to be able to represent that graphically to make it a bit clearer than the use cases that defined by now.
Okay.
It's all right.
Right, so yeah, people, you can, write little sections that then can be pasted in, later.
Yeah.
I'll tell somebody who has the ownership, the key there. So that would be pretty good too.
Does Google Doc work?
We kind of want to keep everything in Word, I think, just to make it easier for OMG people.
But I mean, if you do that, edits or do the comments on the side, that the person, let's say Till, can still sort of make the changes on the document if everyone just comment on the side or suggest the changes on the side. You can always download Google Doc in different formats or even into a Word document format.
Yeah, that's true. It requires some work to convert the Google Doc back into the OMG format, but I could do that in November once. So we could also have Google Docs. Maybe it's more flexible, and then more people can edit concurrently.
Okay,
yeah.
If you're willing to go through the pain of the translation.
Yeah. The good thing is that we get more help by people.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, great. So, unfortunately, I have to leave now, but I think it has been a great session, and thank you for all the good work.
Thank you, Jeff.
Next meeting will be in 2 weeks, as usual.
Yes.
Okay, thanks to you. Bye, guys.
So we're done now. See you all later.
Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.